The Night Sky for July 2008 is part of the Jodcast. For the full show, go to www.jodcast.net.
Well, July 2008. Well, at least I suppose for astronomers we can say that the nights are getting slightly longer. You haven't got to stay up quite so late to see things in the sky. It's not perhaps the best month of the year in terms of what we can see, but nevertheless it is worth getting out 10:30 to 11-ish with binoculars or perhaps even a telescope or just your eyes to have a look and see what you can see. At the beginning of July, Leo the Lion is actually setting in the west, and we'll come back to Leo a little bit later on. A couple of nice things to see there in the first week of July. There's then a rather blank area of sky, which is the constellation of Virgo, with only really one bright star called Spica. But in this region, in fact, there are lots of galaxies visible with a telescope. It's called the Realm of the Galaxies, because we're looking towards a giant cluster of galaxies. We call it the Virgo Cluster. And our little group of galaxies, our own Milky Way, the Andromeda Galaxy, and M33, are the three largest galaxies of our own group. We're sort of an outrider group of this so-called Virgo Supercluster, with the Virgo Cluster at its heart. Low in the sky, for those of us in the north of England, a little better for those in the south, you'll see the constellations of Scorpius and Sagittarius. This is a wonderfully rich part of the sky in terms of things to view, but it's not a bad idea to have a holiday in the south of France to see them somewhat higher in the sky. So let me recommend that for July or August. Again, above that, a relatively empty part of the sky is the constellation Ophiuchus, which almost no one's heard of. In fact, the Sun spends some time in here. It is one of the constellations of the ecliptic, but not taken up by the astrologers. Would you want to be called an Ophiuchan? Not particularly nice sounding, is it? So maybe that's why they didn't. Above Ophiuchus is, in fact, the constellation of Hercules, and there are four bright stars at its heart. They make up a shape which is called the keystone, because it looks a little bit like the keystone at the top of a stone arch. If you look from the bottom to the top, right-hand stars of the keystone, as you look at it in the sky, about two-thirds of the way up, particularly with binoculars, you should see a little fuzzy ball, a fuzzy glow. This is, in fact, a wonderful globular cluster. It's called M13, the globular cluster in Hercules. And it is one of around 100 or so spherical globular clusters that surround our own galaxy, probably formed at the time the galaxy was formed, and very, very nice in a medium-sized telescope. Over to the west of Hercules is the constellation of Bootes, with a very nice bright star, Arcturus, but really not very much else there to see. But as you go to the left of Hercules, you come to perhaps the second most beautiful part of the night sky. I think I'd put Orion and Taurus and Gemini, we see them after Christmas, first. But second, I'd put, in fact, Cygnus, Lyra, and Aquila. The brightest star in Cygnus, which is Deneb, the brightest star in Lyra, which is Vega, and the brightest star in Aquila, which is Altair, they form a very prominent triangle in the sky. We call it the summer triangle. A nice thing to do is to take some binoculars and work your way up the lower right-hand side of that triangle from Altair up to Vega. And about a third of the way up, you should see a rather nice little asterism. It's called Brocky's Cluster, and it's like an upside-down coat hanger. So it's often called the coat hanger. That's actually quite pretty. And there are lots of very nice objects to view with the telescope in Cygnus. Even the smallest telescope, looking at the head of Cygnus the Swan, a star called Albireo, you will see a lovely double star, one looking rather gold, the other rather blue. So there's a fair bit in the sky, and higher up still, almost overhead, we have a very rich constellation, which is Ursa Major, the Great Bear. The part that we see most prominently, we call the Plough. If you look with binoculars at the tail of the Great Bear, or the handle of the plough, shall we say, the middle star, in fact, with binoculars you'll easily see, is two stars, Alcor and Mizar. And if in fact you look with the pair of with a telescope, you'll see that one of these is itself a double. It's a very nice little thing to look at with a small telescope. So that's the sky, and obviously as the month goes by, it gets a little bit darker a little bit earlier, which is a help. What about the planets? Well, I'm going to come to Saturn and Mars a little bit later on, because we can see them virtually for the last time for a few months at the very early part of July, and they're close to the constellation of Leo. But just let me summarize some of the other ones first. Mercury actually gets to what is called greatest elongation. It's when the angle it subtends to the sun is largest, on July the 1st. And you can see it in the east-northeast about 45 minutes before dawn. And you'll be able to see it perhaps for the first 2 weeks of July. It gets to magnitude minus one. It's to the lower left of Aldebaran in Taurus. And one way of distinguishing a star from a planet is a planet will not be seen to twinkle as much. It will appear steadier in your binoculars than a star will. So a little chance to see Mercury at the beginning of the month. Venus is in fact, or was, at the extreme far side of the sun on June the 9th, so it wasn't visible at all during June. We'll see it just above the western horizon after sunset, you know, about the last week in July, but to be honest, it'll be very low down and hard to see. Best to wait a few weeks beyond that. Well, the three planets that we can easily see this month are Mars, Saturn, and Jupiter. Let's start with Mars and Saturn. Now, they are very close to the star Regulus. In fact, at the beginning of the month, Saturn's about 4.5 degrees, a little bit up and to the left, shining at magnitude 0.7. Now, on the 5th of June, which is a nice night to have a look, if you've got a good low western horizon, is up and to the left of a thin crescent moon. And between the moon and Saturn, you'll also see Mars. So on July the 5th, very nice evening skyscape, the moon, Mars and Saturn, pretty much in a straight line, with Regulus, in fact, popping up between Mars and the moon. So you've got moon, Regulus, Mars and Saturn. Now, Mars is moving towards the position of Saturn in the sky, and on July the 10th, they're in conjunction. They're just about 3/4 of a degree apart, up to the left of Regulus. By this time, the moon has moved further around. Now, it won't be easy to see, because there'll still be a fair bit of glare in the night sky, but I think with a pair of binoculars, it might be well worth looking out for. Well, the only planet I haven't mentioned yet is, of course, Jupiter. This is probably the best month to see it this year. It rises in the southeast just after sunset at the beginning of July, and in fact, by the end of the month, it's going to be well up in the southeast at about nightfall. It actually is at opposition on July the 9th, which means the Sun, the Earth, and Jupiter in a straight line. Jupiter is opposite the Sun. And that implies it's going to be due south at midnight universal time. So you'll basically see it in the south around midnight. Now, the trouble at the moment is that Jupiter is at the lowest declination, the lowest level in the ecliptic. So it only reaches about 15 degrees above the southern horizon, and that means the atmosphere doesn't help us see it clearly. It has a quite bright magnitude minus 2.7 and a lovely angular diameter of 47 arc seconds or so. Even a small telescope, however, will show you the four Galilean moons of Jupiter as they weave their way around it. And a telescope should show you some of the equatorial bands and maybe even the great red spot on the surface. The images won't be as good as they often are, partly because the atmosphere refracts the light and disperses it so that you get several different colored images sort of separated. If you have a telescope, and you may have what is called a narrowband filter, like an oxygen 3 filter, it will reduce the brightness, but you'll be seeing it in just one wavelength of light, and that will eliminate some of the effects, and you may well see a clearer image. So I think that rounds up July. best of luck. I hope you do see some nice things in the sky. And as we go through the rest of the year, the nights get longer and perhaps we have more to see.